Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. This is another episode of Special Day Morning After Dark. It has been Saturday, and it has been a special day. And that can only mean that it is time for the show where we get out into the weeds, so to speak. And I don't mean 420, although, night show, anything could happen. No, but seriously, I'm very excited to have my guest on tonight. He's a BYU professor who has worked out some kind of technology that I don't quite understand, but I'm sure we're going to get right into. You know, why don't we just launch right into it? Your name is Follett Young.
Yes, thank you for saying it correctly. Like, people are always like, Follett, but it's Follett. Thank you.
Follett Young. Well, thank you. I'd like to introduce Follett Young. First time guest on the show.
Thank
you. BYU professor.
That's correct.
And how long have you been with the university?
Almost 15 years now. I'm tenured, which is great because nobody really wanted me to do what I really wanted to do until I'd had tenure. So the freedom with tenure is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I imagine. From what I've heard, that's a nice reassurance. Obviously, we are going to have to get into kind of what was pitched to me about you, which is this technology you've developed, and what everyone I'm sure wants to hear about. We'll get there. But if I could just, kind of set the stage.
Sure.
BYU professor, what were you teaching? Was it related to this technology, or is this something you've developed since?
Yes. Early at BYU, I was helping in dark matter research, but that's not really my interest. I'm more into quantum physics more generally, and that is applicable to what we'll be talking about today.
I had no idea that BYU had a dark matter research arm.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to call it an arm, but it does seem like a fruitful field, and everybody wants to have somebody who at least, you know, goes to the conferences, and that was me.
Sure. I mean, there are all sorts of things that I imagine BYU, which some people would refer to as the Lord's University, has some interest in all sorts of things relating to quantum physics and dark matter.
I mean,
it is a very Mormon teaching that that matter is that spiritual. There's spiritual matter, is what I'm getting at.
That's right.
And the creation and everything. I mean, I'm sure that was that something that you were drawn to initially, or is that just a side aspect of your work?
Well, it's funny you would ask, because I remember in seminary, I had early morning seminary and where I grew up, and in the morning when you're a teenager, it's hard to focus sometimes. But hearing things from the Doctrine and Covenants would just combine in my head with what I was learning in my science classes, and it really, you know, if Joseph Smith had gone into the sciences, who knows where it would be today? He just had so much insight, just a true genius of all types, not just spiritual.
Sure. I think that a lot of people find those connections very interesting and a very unique part of the LDS faith. But I have not really met very many people out there who have really pursued an integrated study of those two things. I mean, I know a lot of faithful scientists who have an LDS background that informs their work, but I don't really know of many people actively researching these fields. Was there anything you were attempting to find? Is this, I have so many things we could get into, but...
I just don't think it was even possible. It's sort of like, I don't know, germ theory or something. You can't really figure out what's making you sick until you have a proper theory to hang your ideas on. And I think that's a problem that my fellow Latter-day Saint scientists maybe had 30 or 40 years ago. But now we have the techniques and the technology to really pursue some of these paths.
Sure. Well, I guess I should stop, teeing it up or beating around the bush, this technology to which I have referred and that I'm sure a lot of listeners are tuning in just to hear about is you have told me that you were working on a technology to determine if an individual had promised themselves romantically to another individual in the pre-existence. Is that about it?
That's exactly right. Yes. Something which, again, couldn't be done technologically very recently.
Well, I didn't even know it could be done at all. If somebody had asked me, you know, gun to a head, hey, do you think we can determine if people have been, would it be crass to call it like a Saturday's warrioring, like turn that into a verb?
Yeah, I think that is exactly the reason that people don't take this kind of research seriously when they first hear about it. There's nothing like a musical to make something seem silly.
Sure. I mean, I know how much of a knee slapper I find Les Mis to be since they turned that into a musical. Yeah.
I mean, have you read about the French Revolution? It was not that much fun. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Show tunes, I mean, some people try to say there are more dramatic musical theater pieces out there, but to me, they're all just fun and games, regardless of the subject matter.
What is dancing but, you know, aerobics, and what is aerobics but play, and what is play but, you know, silliness?
Certainly. I mean, I've always said that, you know, Cats, Rent, Les Mis, Phantom of the Opera, Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, it's all the same thing to me, which is just a lot of comedy.
Exactly right. I mean, you don't, you know, if you were at some, I don't know what you call cat scientists, felinologists or something, if you went to their big scientific convention, no one's doing cats there. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, I've been to a few of those conventions myself. I'm a big fan of felines, and it's true. You don't really see many musicals going on at those things. That's a long-winded way. Very interesting to know that you're such a fan of musical theater, or at least so familiar with it.
Well, I don't want to be misconstrued. I certainly enjoy musical theater, but I feel it would be honest to say I more laugh at it than with it. And I don't want to come off as having an enthusiasm that maybe others would misconstrue as, you know,
right.
I'm laughing at it, but I enjoy it so much.
Yeah. You're a very serious and reputable scientist. But yeah, that was all just a long-winded tangent of talking about Saturday's Warrior and thinking, if somebody had asked me if that was possible, I wouldn't have even imagined it would be possible in the next 10 years, 50 years, maybe ever. But you say that it is only recently that this has become available.
Yes, and I have to admit I was surprised that I was able to do it. When I first came up with the idea, I thought, there's no way, but I did the math and realized that it was possible with today's technology, and it's been great. I've really learned a lot.
Yeah, so before we get into some of those implications and what this could mean, you know, your motivations, the end product, if you will, let's just maybe get into what this looks like in practice. You've referred to it as a technology, but I don't actually know. Is this a machine? Is it, you know, a computer program? How does this look in practice?
Sure. Well, I don't mean to offend you. Is it Laser Ace? But I'm going to dumb this down a little bit just for the broad audience. I know
no,
you're
close
serving.
Enough. Yeah, certainly.
Thank you. So here's the basic... Here's basically how it works. Have you heard of the cosmic microwave background radiation?
Not specifically, but I think I could piece together what that means. Is that kind of like what's that science fiction term where there's just energy hanging around in the air that people want to harness? It's
I guess you could say that. It has to do with the Big Bang and the beginning of creation and just what's left out there. And we look at this stuff to understand the age of the universe and what it was like at the beginning and so forth.
Okay.
So what you have to understand is that if you accept that human beings like yourself and myself, if you look at us, if we accept, and this is what you might call just one of those things you have to think about in order to proceed down this path. But if you accept that we are children of God and have like spirit or intelligence or whatever inside us, and it says in Abraham, it's never been created or whatever. Now, that being the case, that means that there is something inside of us that is connected to the cosmic microwave background. It's old enough, it's coexistent with eternity. So what you do is you condense and refract the CMBR through a body, and it interacts with the cosmic microwave background that's within that person, and you get a reading. That's the basics.
So you're basically, I'm trying to think of a way I could dumb this down even further. I mean, I know I have some real knuckleheads that listen to this. No offense to any of them, but I think they would agree with that description. Basically, what you're saying is you're like, it's like looking through a telescope and you're seeing the light that is now just arriving to the planet, and then you are working backwards from that to view the past.
Yeah, so in this really dumb example you came up with, and I thank you for helping me at dumbing it down, you, the person that I'm studying, would be the telescope.
Okay.
That I'm looking at the light through.
Interesting. I've never thought about what it would be like to be a telescope.
Thrilling is what people tell me.
Yeah, do you think a living telescope sees everything that it's pointed at, or do you think it just isn't aware that it exists at all?
Well, yeah, it would be totally possible to use people as telescopes without them knowing. I'm sure you know that things have been complicated. You know, there's a lot of... It's expensive to do the kind of research I'm doing. BYU is not sending up satellites. We're not building giant observatories on top of volcanoes. So I have to make do with what I got. And what I got is Y mount. And fortunately, the shape of the Y, kind of like a dowsing rod... is actually, and the bright whiteness of it, and just with a few tweaks to the Y, I'm able to use that as my mechanism for looking through people.
Wow, there are a lot of implications there. One thing I just wanted to mention, and I don't want to rub salt in any wounds, but I did hear that the University of Utah recently built their own volcano research facility. Yeah. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know... I don't think the research they're doing is going to pan out, but any observatory is a good observatory, in my opinion.
Sure. You could do all sorts of experiments on top of a volcano if movies are to be believed.
I think that is one thing they generally have correct.
Do you think that movies are to be believed?
Well, you know, depending on your... well, as we've established, as soon as they break into song and dance, reality is lesson, shall we say. But overall, sure, there's a lot of interesting things you could learn from movies, but you should definitely go out and get a PhD afterwards to make sure that you understood what they were getting at correctly.
Yeah, I mean, if I have taken one thing away from following Neil deGrasse Tyson on Twitter, it's that you have to study all the movies you watch and make sure they're accurate.
That's, yeah, he's a personal friend of mine. Obviously, he thinks I'm nuts because he's not religious, but, you know, takes all kinds.
What are you going to do? No, sorry, I'm getting distracted with questions. It's not very often that I can speak with a scientist that has the answers about things like if we can believe movies, song and dance, research volcanoes, all these things. I'm
sure
going to try my best to keep my simple undergrad brain focused here. So you have this technology, you can use the Y mountain as a kind of a celestial dowsing rod to read into people's pre-existence. Was the Y mountain, is that just a happy coincidence, or was it developed as some form of technology?
No, it's just really lucky. When I first started, I imagined looking at a single person at a time, but what I realized was when you focus the CMB through a single person, you can't get a proper reading because there's nothing for it to react against. So then I realized what I need to do is do two people at the same time, and in order to do that, I would need to have them sort of at a branch, which focuses down into a single point. And I sketched it on my paper and I realized that's a Y. So wow. with a new sort of, well, I sorry, patent's pending, so I can't get too detailed on this, but we put a new form of paint on the Y, stand one person up at each tip of the Y, and put my equipment down at the bottom serif, and focus the CMB through them, and then I can see the patterns that the waves passing through them make. And by observing the patterns in their mutual waves, that's how I am able to understand about their path specifically.
Fascinating. I mean, that is a very happy bit of luck. But you know what they say about science? It's, 90% luck and 10% maybe thinking about some things a little bit.
At BYU, of course, we say it's 90% the hand of God and 10% perseverance or whatever.
So, oh, sure, sure.
You know, because we're a little different than other schools in that
way. I'm kind of piecing something together right now. And this is all speculation. So let's just say that this is all alleged. I don't want to speak for anyone. And not to bring up the U again, I know about the holy wars and all that. There's a bit of rivalry, I did hear recently that some professors up at the U got in some trouble because they were actually trying to run an experiment with, you would have it, a couple up at the U on the mountain, and they put these two people at the top of the U. Yeah. And I don't know what they were expecting to do, but the two people kind of got merged at the bottom of the U and created some kind of a Lovecraftian dark monster.
Yeah.
And I mean, they were trying to cover it up. Do you think they were trying to steal your research? I'm just putting that together.
No, I think that's really the wrong way to look at it. See, I had just published my first paper, and we actually have a fairly good relationship between the two quantum programs, us and the U. Football is, that's a different thing. When football comes around, it's a little different. But
yeah, I know what you mean.
So they were trying to reproduce my research, and which is great. That's an important part of science, is reproducing each other's research. And I said, you can come use the Y, but they couldn't get funding for that for football reasons. and so they tried to do it on the U, and I didn't know for sure it was going to happen, but I tried to talk them out of it. Can you do? You give professional advice to someone, but they have to make their own decisions. It was very sad, though. I hope they don't end up in prison. I know there's been some talk about that.
Well, I hope that eldritch abomination that they spawned can live a good life, and maybe hopefully one day could go to the U or BYU.
Why not?
Who's
right?
to say?
Sorry. I was just going to say the sad thing is, like, if they had been two people who had been connected since the pre-existence, it might have been an easier story for them, but that's clearly not going to be the case.
Yeah. I'm just thinking now about all sorts of experiments you could run on all kinds of mountains with big letters on them. I mean, you got them all over Utah. Where I grew up, there was kind of a W on the mountain, and you could you could do some interesting things there. I mean, I don't pretend to be a scientist, but I would certainly eat some popcorn and watch some scientists work that one out.
Yeah, if funding ever gets bad enough, we should do that. That's a great idea.
I mean, and what is a W but two U's or two V's, rather?
It's right in the name.
Right. Okay, so we had one call-in question, and I'm going to cue that up now, and we can get into that before I forget about it.
Great. Can't wait to hear it.
Yes, my question for Dr. Young, prior to hearing about this technology, my preferred method for discovering my premortal promises for anyone that I would marry was swiping through Tinder, just as the spirit guides, trying to feel, out, all left, right, swipe left, left, right, right. Is this an improvement on this technique, or is this, could they be used maybe in tandem with each other to maybe refine some of my results? And I'm really excited about this technology and what promises it holds. So, first time caller.
Okay, so that came to us from Clayton C. And I guess before we get your answer on that, I should kind of set the stage. I don't know if I've really established everything really clear for people who might be big time idiots out there or otherwise aren't familiar with the general beliefs of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and the Mormon community and culture. But essentially, we believe that we were living as spirits in a pre-existence before we came to this world. There's kind of a folk belief out there that some people promise that they would become friends or romantic partners in this life, that they would find each other again, because we believe that a veil of forgetfulness, in a manner of speaking, comes over us when we're born, which is why we don't remember this pre-existence. And I think a folk doctrine would be the way to describe it. So thanks, Clayton C., for calling in. And what are your thoughts? Do you think this method could help people beyond traditional dating or even modern dating experience?
Well, it's a good question. I think it depends a little bit on what kind of answer you're looking for. And go back to something you said, like Spencer Kimball said, there's no such thing. And as promising yourself to someone in that pre-life. And my research suggests he is absolutely correct. I have found very few examples. Would you want to guess what percentage of people I've tested actually match up?
Oh, geez. Let me run some numbers in my head. I mean, I'm thinking already, okay, how many people are going to agree to this research? Second of all,
it's BYU.
Okay, that's fair enough. But then you got to get these people all the way up to the Y Mountain. I'm not sure how big of a distance is between the two points on the Y, but I imagine it takes some time to swap people in and out. I don't know. The number must be small. Sorry, what were you saying about that?
I was just saying the pandemic has been great for me because people want to get outside and socially distance, and this is great for that.
Sure, sure.
So many volunteers these days. But the answer is zero. None. Wow. Zero. And I've thought about it. And to get to Clayton's question, like, you should feel free, you know, because you're not going to find – there are no promised lovers. None. Mm. I feel pretty confident making that state. And it makes sense when you think about it, because let me ask you something, Laz. If you promised yourself to someone in the pre-existence and you had like quantum entanglement or whatever it is that I'm looking for, if that happened, how willing would you be to completely forget that and just hope for, you know, a little bit of luck to get you together in this life?
Oh, that's, listen, I'm not afraid to say that I'm a pretty shallow guy. This is the After Dark show. I might get in a little bit of trouble with the PC thought police out there, but I'll just say that if it would all depend on how attractive they were, to be frank. If it was some pre-existence uggo, then, you know, sorry if I can be so blunt, I'm probably canceled, but that's kind of the tradition on the night show. Then you're probably right, but I'll tell you something. If there's a real 8-cow wife up there, then I might just try my luck, you know.
Do you mind if I ask you a religious question?
Oh, certainly.
All right, so you'll need a bit of population thinking. So think about how many humans we're not, you know, evolution. We don't know when, you know, Adam was or whatever, but think about how many humans have lived. And how many, you know, billions of 10 billion or however many humans there have been total.
Just
10 billion for a number.
Yeah.
Now, according to what we hear in church, one third of the hosts of heaven were kicked out, right? Like they wanted Satan's plan or whatever sure. That means. So we're not all living on Earth at the same time. So a third of all potential humans means they probably outnumber us at any given time. Yet, let me ask you this. Do you feel like there are devils around you all the time?
I mean, personally?
Yeah.
A little bit. I mean, I listen to a lot of, you know, kind of 90s nu metal, and I can kind of feel that energy around me, but that's just myself. I mean, I don't know if that's common.
Yeah, well, so you're inviting it, and you still just feel it a little. So one of the results of my research is that it suggests to me that a lot of the people who followed the so-called adversary were probably not evil, but they were probably romantics. The people who promised themselves to someone else in the pre-existent life didn't want to take that chance. So they're just off canoodling as spirits right now. And that's why, A, I've never found anyone who matches, and B, temptation is not what it could be.
I was going to ask you if, when you brought up the third host, if that was involved either with couples that stuck together through that or people who were just kind of, you know, wanted to make a promise that they didn't really intend to keep, you know, maybe they promised themselves to someone and they were like, oh, I got to get out of here. And they just, you know, took the bus out of town, so to speak.
I hadn't thought of that. That's a real possibility.
So in your point of view from your research, you would determine that what President Kimball said was true, that those promises weren't really made, but not necessarily because they weren't made at all, but because all of the demons that surround us are romantically intertwined.
I couldn't speak to percentages, but I suspect it is a significant percentage, yes.
Do you have a method, or are you working on anything that could potentially tap into these demons, or is that just bad news that you don't want to touch?
Well, I have put some thought into it, but I have not come up with a really feasible testing strategy yet. I'm hoping some of the new batch of grad students will have some ideas.
I mean, I'm no scientist, but have you considered some kind of like vacuum cleaner? I see that works in movies and video games sometimes for catching ghosts.
Yeah, actually, someone just recommended a movie. Maybe you've heard of it. It's called Ghost Boosters, I think. And
I close enough. Yeah.
Yeah. This weekend, I'm hoping to see if it's on the Netflix or some other location.
Yeah, it's a good watch. It's very. I don't know how you feel about. I mean, we don't have to get into politics, but I don't know how you feel about like Reaganomics and kind of bootstrapping, but that movie has a lot of that in it. It's kind of about starting a business and not taking any flack from the EPA, and it's an interesting watch. I mean,
well, that explains why BYU students know it if it's super, you know, conservative in its politics.
yeah, I guess so. Well, we've covered some really interesting ground. I think the next logical question, having to do with the call we just got and just kind of looking at the future of this and actually tying in pretty nicely to, entrepreneurship is, what's the future of this? You say you've got it published. Are you thinking that there's some kind of product you could generate from this? Is that not something ethically you would want to be involved in? I mean, you already think nobody's going to match, but the people might want to take their chances.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, I'm a pure scientist, Mr. Laz, and I just am interested in research, but the universe owns the university owns my patents, and therefore, you know, if they wanted to share them with the Marriott School, they have a good entrepreneur program there. I wouldn't be surprised, but that's out of my hands. And even though you're not going to find matches, you might. The pattern suggests that some people may have known better, certain people better than other people, and I can't tell if those relationships, you know, prehistorically, so to speak, were positive or negative, but you know, it may be a reason to go on a date and you know what they say, sex sells, and that's what you know what they say.
Ooh, yeah. Well, interesting. So here's kind of what I'm imagining. And again, you said you're a pure scientist, you probably wouldn't be involved in this, but maybe you know if it's feasible. You know, they say technology, it's always getting smaller. And so obviously going up to the Y Mountain, that's pretty difficult. Although, you know, like you said, it's a pandemic, people might want to get out. But I'm kind of envisioning if there was maybe an app on your phone where two people could kind of hold like a... Maybe there's an accessory that goes into an aux cord that kind of splits off like a dowsing rod, and then two people hold the end, and then the app can, you know, say if they, if it worked out. That could be interesting. You could sell the app, you could sell the accessory. I mean, any entrepreneurs out there that have access to this patent, something to consider.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, there is a problem with the wavelength of the microwaves. You know, you have to have a certain distance between people, but you know, figuring it out, the long enough wires and people's willingness, like I can see this taking the place of a bankrupt Macy's in a mall or something. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh yeah,
you could maybe fit it into one of those with a bit of, you know, that's a few years off, but I can imagine that with enough funding, you can make that happen.
I don't pretend to understand how they keep making these things smaller. I mean, the other day I was looking at my phone and I told my friend, you know, they make this thing any thinner and I'm just going to break it in half, which, you know, we've been thinking about for a while now, but it keeps happening. I mean, maybe you get the ghost of Steve Jobs on it and he could figure it out. Are you in touch with the ghost of Steve Jobs?
No, the past, like I mentioned earlier, like finding people who were never born, I don't know how to do that, but I can imagine if assuming that bodies leave some sort of echo of the spirit or the intelligence, it seems feasible that with a significantly sized, like say a finger at least, it seems possible perhaps that we could do some of this research for the dead also.
Oh, interesting. I mean, you could, yeah, there are all sorts of implications there. So something that I keep thinking about is we have, you know, this research involving generally two people. I'm sure you could have figured out a way to work this out polygamously if the research was being done, you know, 100 years earlier. But what I'm wondering is, what about family relations? In my family, we always joked about, you know, like my parents were giving me grief as a teen, and you know, they'd say we're an eternal family and we chose each other, which I don't know if that's a common folk doctrine. I would always kind of retort in my own way, like, well, I only picked you because you were the last people left, you know. Kind of a little jab, but we all meant well. And I'm wondering if your technology can show if that is the case, if people did actually choose their own family setups. If so, I always wondered, you know, well, we sure all look genetically alike, but maybe our spirits kind of are a random pick and we won't really know what they looked like till after. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I haven't done the math on that, and it is a research question I'm interested in, but a strange thing, and maybe you can explain this to me, because you have, it sounds like you have siblings and such, and I'm an only child and didn't really know my parents, so it's a little less clear to me, but although romantic partners seem quite happy to get up on the Y and be disappointed, siblings, parent, child, like, no, always tell me no, not going to do it, no.
Hmm. I don't know. I wonder why that might be. I think my family might be interested in it vaguely, but all I imagine is maybe they just have a lot going on and that's the only reason they would turn it down, unless they're worried about, you know, finding out that they romantically promised themselves to each other, a mom and a son or something weird like that.
Oh,
you know,
That
would be pretty awkward, kind of like when you find out that you married your cousin, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, man. I hadn't thought about that. Maybe that's what they're thinking.
So do you don't have any siblings and you don't really know your parents. Were you just left at the university. Your last name is Young. That's obviously, right. Is there a connection there? I assume there has to be distantly.
Oh yeah, I'm Mormon royalty. Yeah, but so I got according to FamilySearch, I have I mean, it doesn't show you your first cousins, but if you go back a generation, just the people who would have been in my parents' generation, like my parents' first cousins that are dead now, I have over 40,000. So lots of family, just never really knew them.
Yeah.
And you know, one of my colleagues says Follett, this is why you're doing your research like you're doing, but I don't think so. I really think it was that seminary class, going back to where we started.
Huh. So were you raised, who raised you? Do you have memories of, are you just talking about your biological parents, or you didn't know any parents? Were you kind of adopted, if I may ask? You know,
oh, sure.
I know it's personal, but right now it's kind of sounding like maybe you were just kind of raised. I don't want to presume anything, but are you named Young after Brigham Young, or are you named Young after the university? It kind of sounds like you might have just been raised there.
Young is my actual last name. That is my actual last name, given to me by my parents, both of whom, incidentally, were named Young. Not cousins. They were fourth cousins, which is fine, I would say.
Sure.
But yeah, Brigham on both sides of the family. So maybe I should put me and the university up on the Y. Maybe we were attached, but, no. So my parents died when I was very young. We belonged to a very close knit ward in a small town in the Sierra Nevadas, and, just sort of passed around, it's downwind from that, some of the nuclear waste, deposit sites in Nevada, so a lot of infertility in the ward, and so not very many kids. So I actually, until I was 11 or 12, I thought parent meant like the adults who took care of you, which was basically everyone in my ward. It was a little confusing to me, but this is actually one of the ways movies helped. I watched Home Alone and The Parent Trap at the Maxwell's house, and that really opened my mind to like family and what it meant.
Do you think, is there any chance that your intelligence and love of science now was influenced at all by radioactive fallout? I don't know if you're familiar. You seem like you know a fair amount of movies and musicals. I don't know if you're familiar with comic books, but I'm thinking about the leader from The Incredible Hulk. You know, he's green, he's got a huge brain, and that was caused by radiation. So it's there's certainly a precedent, at least if comic books are to be believed.
Well, the only comics I've read are Dennis the Menace and some R. Crumb, and I don't remember that coming up, but that's very interesting. I should look into that.
Yeah, maybe something worth your time. Well, I think we're getting down to our time for a few more subjects we could talk about. Generally, since this show, while it is the After Dark show and things can get a little bit out into the strange, it also is connected with the general Special Day Mourning brand, which is focused on, obviously, Utah, Mormonism, the culture. So I don't mind bringing a little bit of questions of faith into the night show. How have you found that your faith has worked with your science? How you obviously have reconciled certain things. Have you come across anything that has given you doubts, or anything that you have actually been able to prove beyond the shadow of a doubt?
Well, I do feel that faith and doubt are kind of like, speaking of quantum entanglement, I'm not sure you can really separate them, but I think there's no question that my science, my research, my findings, they back up my faith. I don't know how you do my my research and be a Catholic, but yeah, I think as a Latter-day Saint, it's really good and it really, yeah, I'd say my research suggests that Doctrine and Covenants, the Pearl of Great Price, there's a lot of truths in there, and granted they're kind of poetic, but they're true, and that did that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I just think it's really interesting whenever I get the chance to, like I said, don't get the chance often to speak with a devout scientist, but whenever I read the work or findings of one, I always think it's interesting the things that they feel they can reconcile and the things they feel they can take on faith. And my big question has always been, you know, I know some people are pretty hesitant to follow the idea of apologetics or trying to prove their religion through historical or quantum means, but if you can, I just wonder, you know, why we aren't bringing that to the forefront and just really, really putting the findings out there. Like you said, it might be kind of hard to do your work as a Catholic, I imagine. So,
Catholics.
So it seems like there's kind of this filter, though, that even if these findings are discovered, like I heard through the grapevine that last month BYU had actually found the three Nephites and were potentially holding them in captivity. And I just have to wonder, when these things get found, it seems like there's some kind of filter out to the general public where it kind of reverts back to just faith. And they say, you know, well, we might have some evidence for this. We might have some strong hypotheses or theories for that. But in the end of the day, you got to take it all on faith. So I'm wondering, you know, why aren't we just owning this stuff?
It's a really good question. And something I was thinking about, I actually approached my stake president about this, and he put me in contact with our area authority, and I said, hey, every April we have like the finance guy and the stats guy, why don't we have a science guy? And he put me in touch with someone in another office and offered to put me on the science committee that this is run by the Quorum of the 12, but they wanted me to sign a non-disclosure agreement. I'm about publishing and making knowledge available to everyone, just didn't sit right with me. So I suspect that there's a lot of discussions happening, but why they make those decisions, I just wish I knew more.
Well, I have often heard it said that the greatest natural enemy of the scientist is the bureaucrat.
Can I have that one? I want to quote that at the next faculty
certainly.
Meeting. That's a good one.
Certainly. I don't know who said it, but you can just probably attribute it to the poet or something like that.
If I say it in front of a librarian, they'll let me know. Librarians, they're always looking things up.
certainly. Well, I think all that's a pretty good tee up to, I guess, what would be my final question, which is, to put it simply, what advice or what general thoughts do you have for the young scientists out there who might have a crazy harebrained idea about something in the gospel and they want to pursue a bit of faith and science, potentially at BYU? What do you think?
Well, we do have, I think at BYU, we're really open to that, but not to undergrads, like, shut up, undergrads, you know what I'm saying? You were an undergrad, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, you do your time and get your first degree, your second degree, you get your third degree, maybe a couple postdocs, and then, you know, you get tenure, and yeah, do it, because we need more people like you, but it's going to be at least 12 years of hard labor before we let you in.
Right. I imagine not only because you get the guarantee of tenure, but also just to climb the ranks and get in on some of these seemingly covert goings on at BYU. I imagine there's a lot you have to prove from yourself.
Yeah, it's funny. I've never been mentioned in the alumni magazine, but there's... you take a lot of our research and it's on the website. People just look, you know, you can download the permission form to be to be part of what I'm doing, but yeah, people don't look. People don't look. The best way to hide something's in plain sight.
Certainly.
I learned that from a Sherlock Holmes movie.
Well, I just have to say, you know, if these are the things you're telling us here today, I can't imagine what you're not telling us. So,
well, if you know anybody who wants to be a postdoc, I'll tell them.
Okay. Well, thanks. It's been great. Any last words you want to leave? Anything you want to plug?
Yeah. If people could get on the Twitter and tell the Maxwell Institute to publish my brief theological introduction to the preexistence, I'd appreciate it. They say they don't want to because it's got too many numbers, but what are they for? Like, tell them. Get on Twitter. Tell them.
Certainly. And I would just like to plug, if I may, there's a great account on Twitter, a guy that goes by the handle Theric Jepson. And the handle is at Thamazing, Thamazing. I don't know if you're familiar with that account, but I've just been in contact with him a little bit. He's also involved with the Association for Mormon Letters. Yeah, I just like to throw out some plugs now and then for interesting people.
Check him out.
You know, it's my own show, but I like to stick within the parameters and only throw out plugs at the end. So, Well, this has been a great, very eye-opening, and I appreciate you coming on.
Well, thanks for having me. And yeah, if you and your family want to come by, just download the permission form from the site.
Great.
BYU.edu.
Perfect. All right, everyone. Until next time, bye.
See ya.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Special Day Morning After Dark. Thank you, everybody, for supporting the show. Make sure that you go out and like, subscribe, share wherever you can. I think iTunes is the big one. I apologize. I didn't realize until after I had recorded this episode that I didn't use a pop filter. So I'm sorry for my plosives, as it were. Once again, I'm Laz. It has been a pleasure, as always, to have on such strange and interesting guests on both the morning and night show. You can follow me anywhere, just about, at Mormcore, or visit my website, lazaros.net, still 95% under construction. Thanks again, and bye!